The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into hour three. As we conclude our week, we are privileged, honored to have with us in studio Rabbi Pinchas Alush. He is the host of the Rabbi Alush podcast, heard on Apple Podcasts, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. I see you have a nice new logo there on your podcast page, Rabbi. Welcome back to the studio. He is the head rabbi at Congregation Beth Tefillah on Shea Boulevard in Scottsdale, where, as he said, says, all are welcome, observant or religious or not, or Jewish or not. We bring him in on Fridays to kind of move us out of the rough and tumble of the stuff we usually deal with and get us into a more Sabbath-oriented mindset. First and foremost, Rabbi, beyond welcome, please, an update on your son, Yisrael Mordechai Chaim.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the welcome. It's always a pleasure being here. And thank you, more importantly, for asking about my son each and every time. So as your listeners know, he is an IDF soldier, paratrooper, serving in Gaza. He's been serving in Gaza since the beginning of this terrible war. He's doing well. He's in good spirits. He has somewhat of an easier job now. Even, of course, everything is relative. He is not in Gaza as he was for the past 4.5 months, but he's on a base just outside of Gaza from where he and his peers go in and out to operate and to execute what the commanders want.
Good, 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 good. His name, Yisrael Mordechai Chaim, it strikes me there is a holiday that will be taking place, a Jewish holiday on Sunday. Certainly, part of his name must be named after one of the main protagonists in this holiday, yes?
That's correct, yes. Tomorrow night and on Sunday is the Festival of Purim, in which we read the story of Mordechai, who was the leader of the Jewish people, and the Jews standing up to the first Adolf Hitler of history, perhaps, a man named Haman, who wanted to exterminate the Jewish nation. And he stood on the opposite side, not just fighting him, but also responding to that evil with tremendous goodness, and eventually he and the nation prevailed.
It's a impactful story and holiday, Purim, and it has some interesting requirements. It has also some interesting practices. One of my favorite, is drinking on Purim to the point of, in what some might say is a moral blindness, where you can no longer distinguish. Now, I don't know if this is mythical or traditional or if this is actually a commandment, but the idea that you can no longer distinguish between Mordechai and Haman or friend and foe. And tell me, is this more just custom and practice, or is this a commandment that people take that series of sips?
So that's a good question. Well, very many people take it quite seriously.
Yes,
actually.
I can see that.
Only once a year, though.
I'm very religious. I'm very religious once a year, sir.
So let's make it very clear, once a year. You know, Maimonides, one of the great Jewish philosophers, says that you can accomplish that a commandment of, as you said, being intoxicated to the point that you are beyond reason, mm-hmm, just by sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So when you sleep, you're also beyond reason.
Mm-hmm.
But some do take it very seriously. And the idea on one foot is to really connect to the main message, mm-hmm, of this festival.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that if we, back in the day, in the 5th century when this story happened, if we had followed just our minds and try to calculate how the events will evolve, we would have thought that there is no way that this Jewish nation can really survive this Haman. We would have thought that we are doomed. And somehow, somewhere, God came through for the Jewish people once again. And we became victorious, and Haman is the one who was hung at the end of the day, which really takes us to a level that is beyond reason. Sometimes we have to give it up to the higher power, as it says in the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. Say, you know what, God, I don't see how anything good can come out of the situation I'm in.
Yeah.
But I'm giving it over to you. And by giving it over to you, I know that you will lead me to victory and to redemption beyond reason.
There's an interesting thing in, I think it's fair to say, Orthodox or Torah or observant Judaism that I drew out of this too from some of my research. Because, of course, we're not supposed to be drunk. We're not supposed to be morally confused. We're not supposed to act like fools or celebrate like fools. Perhaps this one day is that exception, and fool might be too strong of a word, but you take the point. And if I have this right, there's a teaching in the Talmud that within the practice of Judaism, for everything that's prohibited, and there's a lot that's prohibited, there are little outs, there are little areas of permissiveness. This might be, this one day might be an example of that. For example, we're not supposed to go after, obviously, or in lust or any other way, a married woman. That's prohibited, is one example I read. But a divorcee would be okay. Mm-hmm. There are these kind of little areas where you can exercise what? A little latitude.
Right.
Let off a little steam.
That's correct, yes.
Is that a fair point, a fair drawing out?
Absolutely. There are loopholes or,
yeah,
like you said, these little
asterisks.
Areas within asterisks.
Yeah.
Footnotes.
To
every law. And sometimes you have to be creative in order to find them. But the idea is that we live in this plane in which there is a very strict structure. But on the other hand, there is also very much room for human creativity. And that's the beauty. It's that relationship with God in which we say to God, yes, we are completely nullified to you and to your commandments, but we are also in it not just blindly, mm-hmm, with our hearts, mm-hmm, with our minds, mm-hmm, and with our calculations and with our own human condition. And there, when we bring that to God and God brings his commandments to us, there in that space, we meet.
Yeah.
And there magic happens.
Can I stay on this point for a moment?
Absolutely.
I didn't mean to start the show here, but it's got some wheels turning about things I've thought about for a long time and never had the chance to ask you, a rabbi, so I'll just take advantage of it. There was a teaching I was told of once that if one, and I'm sure there is a limit, if one is to sin, they should wear dark clothing and go to a town where they are not known, if that's true. One of the interesting comments I read about that was the dark clothing is to be worn not to help conceal you where you aren't so that you won't be known, but because it's a sign of mourning, and perhaps even if you're in mourning, that should stop you. I don't know if that rings any bells or has any basis.
No, absolutely. You're right. And there is a teaching like
and
that.
And after this, I'll stop looking for loopholes, I promise. Okay? I'll stop looking for the justification of my life. Okay? All right.
And that's the point. Right. There is a teaching like that. Not to tell people, it's okay to sin as long as you wear dark clothes and you go far away.
Okay.
But the idea is indeed to warn a person that before he thinks of engaging in sin, that he's becoming dark,
yeah,
through that sin.
Yeah.
Wear that darkness,
yeah,
and that will stop you from sin.
Yeah.
That's why this teaching. Because we really have a choice at every given point of the day. Will we be agents of light or,
yep,
agents of darkness?
Right.
Wearing clothes that are dark before we sin will remind us that by sinning we'll become agents of darkness.
Yeah.
So maybe there and then we'll stop.
Good. Good. Okay. Now let's move to I had to just – I'll have a better weekend now.
Pleasure.
Thank you for being a
– Of course. Back to that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Though, that,
sure,
it's interesting because, yeah, I had a great teacher who said that in every festival, every Jewish festival, and I would say in every festival altogether, we give up something for God.
Okay.
So, for example, in the Feast of the Tabernacle, Sukkot, we give up our homes. We go and live in huts.
Right.
On Passover, which is also coming up, we are not allowed to eat leavened bread, so we give up our bread.
Right.
On Purim, which is coming up, as mentioned, tomorrow night and on Sunday, and we drink to the point that we are beyond reason, we give up our minds.
Mm. Interesting.
And sometimes it's important for the human being to remember that your mind doesn't know it all.
Yeah.
You should give it up from time to time.
Nice. Nice. All right. Rabbi Alush is my guest. I want to talk about the book of Leviticus, which we start tomorrow, reading in synagogues all across the country, all across the world. And I want to talk a few more minutes about this holiday that comes out of the book of Esther as well with the rabbi. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest, P-I-N-C-H-A-S Alush, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. Holiday we've been talking about that starts Saturday night and goes through Sunday is Purim, which means, what, counting of lots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's correct. Purim means lots. Mm-hmm.
And it is found in the book, out of the story, out of the book of Esther. I noticed this in my research today, and maybe it was in your reference to it in your newsletter too, Rabbi. Esther is one of the only books, I think Song of Songs is the Shir Shirim is the only other one that does not mention God.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of interesting. Traditional Judaism, did you write this or did I pick it up from somewhere else? Traditional Judaism views the absence of God's overt intervention in the story as an example of how God can work through seemingly coincidental events and the actions of individuals.
Mm, that's right. And that even though God may be silent, he's still very much a potent force in our lives. You know, I did not write that, but what I did write in my newsletter was a statement that was found in Cologne, Germany, that was inscribed in one of these cellars where Holocaust survivors were hiding.
Right.
And that expression said, I believe in the sun, even though it may not be shining.
Right.
I believe in love, even though I'm alone. And I believe in God, even though he may be silent.
Yeah.
And that, in many ways, is the message of the book of Esther that does conceal God's name. It cannot be found in any of its verses. Because what the book of Esther is trying to teach us all is that even though God cannot be found immediately or in a revealed way, he is still there, holding you, supporting you, and cheering for you.
I wonder if you could divine from it, too, that it is an example of the kinds of testing we go through when sometimes we don't get a clear message from God. You know, we're not going to get a burning bush in most of the decisions in our lives, if ever. And I wonder if it's kind of the message of doing the right thing when Mordechai is imprecating Esther to do the right thing. It's quite obvious what the right thing is to do, even though she's hesitant. But ultimately, I think I have the story right, mm-hmm. but ultimately does do it, right? It's almost as if it's just so obvious what the right thing to do is. Sometimes you don't really need a lightning bolt.
That's
maybe,
right.
Maybe.
And that's correct, yes. And look, all we have to do sometimes is listen to our intuition.
Yeah.
Our intuition will tell us what the right thing is to do. Esther, I have no doubt, in the story of Purim, knew what the right thing was. But of course, as we all do, she had her own fears and doubts and insecurities and challenges. So she hesitates.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually Mordechai, her uncle, is there to tell her, hey, this is the moment for which you were called. So heed that call or choose the path in which you and the house of your father will perish.
Okay, that's great that you brought that up, because that takes me to the next part of this story that I was kind of centering on, if you will. It says in Pirkei Avot, which is a book of the Talmud, right? The sayings of the father.
Mm-hmm.
Do not separate yourself from the community. So in the book of Esther, Mordechai tells Esther, do not imagine that you will escape with your life. So Esther's Jewish and is not wanting to intervene with her husband, who's not, on behalf of saving the Jews, lest she thinks it'll have a negative consequence to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Mordechai is saying, don't imagine that you'll escape with your life. For if you remain quiet, you know, they're going to get you too. Mm-hmm. We're all in this together.
Right.
That's kind of a message for our time, if I'm reading that right.
Yes, there are three powerful messages.
Many, Leo Strauss, a political philosopher, said, no matter how hard you try to leave Judaism, you can never do it. You will always be remembered as a Jew. You will always be known as a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yes, no, that's a good point, and that's true because, you know, Judaism is not just a religion.
Yeah.
Because if you're not religious, you're still Jewish.
Yeah.
Judaism is not a race because there are Jews of many different races. Judaism, I would say, is not even an ethnic group. You have Sephardic Jews, you know, Spanish Jews, yeah. Ashkenazic Jews. I would say that Judaism is being a part of a family.
Right.
And just as I today cannot say, I want out, I don't want my family anymore, because it was a choice that was made for me,
right.
Not a choice that I made.
Right.
So too, being Jewish is being a part of this family where we can't just say, I want out. It's
right.
with us.
Yeah.
It's a part of our identity.
Yeah.
It's a part of our DNA and of who we are. And
you can change your name. You can cut your beard. You can have any numbers of kinds of pieces of plastic surgery and dye or whatever, but you're going to be that. You're just going
right.
to be that.
That's right. And, you know, unfortunately.
Often to the enemy, by the way.
That's correct. And that's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Jews may not realize that until, God forbid, an enemy comes about and does not differentiate between one Jew and another. We saw that with Hitler. We see that with the Hamas terrorists.
I was going to say, October 7th, they didn't ask what political party. I mean, if you looked at some of these kids that were celebrating and dancing, right. these were not Hasidim.
No,
right.
no. But
Netanyahu voters.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, they were, as they call themselves, peace-loving
right.
leftist yeah. Jews. Yet, that doesn't matter to the enemy of good and to the enemy of humanity altogether. And it would behoove ourselves to remind us of this, even without enemies.
In fact, is it true that some of the kibbutzim that were attacked by people from Gaza who had been part and parcel of those kibbutzim who had worked or traveled through them from time to time, yes?
Mm-hmm. That's yeah. correct. And some, yeah, I mean, these are facts, but some of these Palestinian employees of the kibbutzes
yeah.
Were not only part of the attacks, were part of the preparations.
Yeah.
They were the ones who drew diagrams of the maps
yeah.
of the kibbutzim so that when the terrorists came, they knew exactly who lived where the roads were, so that the attack would be more effective.
And these kibbutzim, if I'm not mistaken, are, how shall I say this? They're not known for being very religious, right? I mean, again, you have a very kind of assimilationist
mm-hmm.
encampment in these. They're as assimilationist as you can get, I guess, in the Middle East, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And let's remind the world also that many of these kibbutzim that were attacked by Hamas terrorists on October 7th were devoted
yeah.
entirely to helping Gazans
right.
on the other side
right.
of the border.
Right.
Many of them raised millions of dollars for them.
Right.
Many of them would take the agriculture from the farms that they themselves harvested in Israel and ship it to Gaza. And yet they met not just an ungrateful force, but an evil one too, that only sought to destroy them regardless of who they were.
Thank you, Rabbi Alush. Let me take a quick commercial break and see if I can relate some of this as best I can to what I kept promising I would, the first book of Leviticus, which is what will be read in synagogues across the world tomorrow. Rabbi Pinchas Alush of the Rabbi Alush podcast with me, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush of Congregation Beth Tefillah is my guest. It's on Shea Boulevard. He invites everyone in our community, that is to say in the audience, religious or not, Jewish or not, to visit. And tomorrow, as will be true of synagogues throughout the world, they'll be reading from the Bible, from the Torah. Vayikra is where they will be reading from, which is the first book of Leviticus. Vayikra means, and he called. Say what you would like if you want to say anything about that itself, Vayikra and the naming of the first chapter. And then I want to talk a little bit about some of the transgressions that are the instruction to us on how to deal with transgressions.
Yes, but I'll get right to it. And I'm so happy you mentioned that first verse, or the first word of that first verse, which means "Hani called Vayikra," because it's interesting that in Jewish tradition, when one begins to learn Torah with his children, as is the commandment, you shall teach them and inscribe them upon their hearts, they have to begin from Vayikra. They learn the parts of Vayikra with the children when they can begin to learn at the age of 5, 6. And the question is why? I mean, Vayikra, that book of Leviticus, speaks of sacrifices and very, I would say, primitive and even boring subjects. But the answer is because of that first word. What we are trying to infuse in our children is that, and he called, life is about knowing that you are always called. God is calling you at every moment, in every place. Can you heed the call? Mm-hmm. That's the question. Mm-hmm. Or as Viktor Frankl put it, and I think we've mentioned it, life is not about asking what I want from life. It is about asking what life wants from me. And he called. Can we hear that call and can we heed it? That should be inculcated in the minds and in the hearts of our children from the very tender years.
And anywhere and everywhere, right? Because to just go back to the book of Esther for a second, something I had meant to mention, but maybe it's relevant here, in your discussion with me a few segments ago about Judaism not necessarily a culture, not necessarily, definitively not a culture, definitively not a race or an ethnicity. The book of Esther, it comes out of Persia.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out of, I guess, what would be modern-day Iran, quite frankly. That's where they were. Right. That's where the story comes from. Even there, there's a calling, right?
Even there, there's a calling.
Right.
Even in the Persians, in the Persian empires of the world,
right,
so to speak, even in the challenges of life that may be Persian-like challenges, even there, God is calling us. I think that's why, I know that the psychological reaction to every challenge is fight or flight.
Mm.
Well, based on this, I would say that there's a third option that we should follow. Not fight and don't flee, but uncover the blessing within the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Grab it by its horns, mm-hmm, until you find it.
Mm-hmm.
And there you will find God's calling and God's blessing.
Yeah, I love that. Bill, who's working with David today, will remember a few years ago we passed out some sheets that people put up on their walls around here. Said, what is my holy mission? And the point being that we've talked about, so a friend of mine told me, I had to go into a meeting I was very much not looking forward to with people I was very much not wanting to see. Mm. And she said to me, before you do, just ask yourself, what is your holy mission? And it changes the whole dynamic.
Mm.
And maybe that's, maybe there's something to that thought that we should always have, even where, even if it's in Persia, or even if it's wherever it is, whatever it is, however tough it looks, look for that. That's that third door, isn't it? That third
Absolutely.
Option.
Look, if I believe in an omnipotent God, then God is as present in the challenging moments of life as is in the bright and joyous moments of life.
Yeah.
So my task then is only to find him and his calling.
Yeah, discover that diamond in that rough. Okay, good. Let me get to an interesting passage in Leviticus 4 when we come back. You probably know where I'm going with this, but it says, speak to the Israelite people thus, when a person unwittingly incurs guilt in regard to any of God's commandments about things not to be done and does one of them, if it is the anointed priest who has incurred guilt, so that blame falls upon the people. You know the machlokas over this. Machlokas is a dispute. Rabbi Pinchas and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest, and he's just so generous with his time to come in here on Friday afternoons. More so to put up with my music, probably. I don't know if he gets exposed to in any other part of his. By the way, let me depart on that, something I've wanted to ask you. As an observant or Orthodox Jewish person, there's a lot of demands on your on any individual's life, be they a rabbi or not. I mean, from the minute you get up to the minute you go to bed, there's a lot of ritual, a lot of prayer, a lot of things you can and cannot do, a lot of things you should and should not do. And then there's the praying three times a day. There's a lot of things that go mm-hmm. on in any observant Jew's life. Very time consuming. Now, make yourself a rabbi who not only has to take care of himself in all these things that God is asking of him, but a community that is probably calling you and emailing and texting you often about, well, questions probably about can they do this or that, or should they do this or that, or how to handle this or that situation. Certainly, obviously, in tragedies, they're going to reach out to you for help with all that kind of stuff and preparation. Perhaps even joyous occasions, they're going to be reaching out to you all the time, a birth, a wedding, the administration of a birth, or not the administration of the birth, but, you know, the practices that go on around a birth, and certainly the administration of a wedding. And then you put out your sermons. You come here once a week. You write. You have to study because you are always needing to, you know, take in. How the heck do you do it all? No, really. I really mean this, because even if you didn't have any of those eight other parts and just had to get through a day as an Orthodox Jew, it's a lot. Never mind with the and family and your own family.
Right.
How do you do it? Really?
Look, I don't know. I really don't know if I have a secret formula. But I will try to share with you three ingredients that I carry into my everyday. Ingredient number one is humility. Recognize that you are not in charge of your plans all the time, that there are always plans that are made for you, and you have to be open to them and humble enough to embrace them. That's number one. So if a birth just happened, then I have to accommodate my schedule to go and see that baby and officiate that service. That's one. Humility. Ingredient number two is drive. Laziness and boredom is your greatest enemy.
Idle hands are the devil's workshop, we were taught years ago.
Right? That's right. Very, very well said. And yes, so I have to be able to commit myself to that drive, to that purpose. Sometimes it's hard. I won't lie. Sometimes I'm tired, and sometimes I might even be lazy. But I think ingredient number three is the most important, and that is that you are in it for the greater picture. Never lose sight of that greater picture. To change the world, it begins with one step. And if I can take 10 steps today or 20 steps today, then I know that the world is changing a little further, a little better than I may have anticipated. I may not see it, but I know and I believe in that greater picture. And that gives me all the satisfaction I need and all the drive that I need.
Nice. Thank you. So when you're reading Leviticus tomorrow in your synagogue, you will read from chapter 4. You'll read from chapter 1 on. But in chapter 4, our mutual friend Tevi alerted me to this passage. Speak to the Israelite people. When a person unwittingly incurs guilt, when he commits a sin, I suppose, in regard to any of the commandments about things that he shouldn't do, and he does one of them, if it is the anointed priest, if it is the leader who has the leader that they have chosen, who has incurred his guilt, so that blame falls upon the people, that's a certain kind of offering for the sin for which he is guilty. And there seems to be a little bit of a dispute between some scholars as to what's being said here about the leader and the people's guilt, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to walk us through that
yes,
a little bit?
Yes, absolutely.
Rashi and Ibn Ezra seem to have conflicting views.
Right.
As I talmudically examined.
Of who's to blame? Who's in charge?
Yeah.
Is it the leader? Is it the people?
Right.
And I think that they would both agree on one thing. A powerful idea. And that is that you cannot truly separate the two.
Okay.
Leaders are intertwined with their people, and the people are intertwined with their leaders. And therefore, when one sins unwittingly, it reflects on the other side of it, on the other side of the equation, on the people if you're the leader, or on the leader if you're the people. And I think that this is true not just on a vast level, but I think, look, it's true for parents who lead their families, lead their children. They're intertwined. If a parent fails, it's a little bit reflective on the children and vice versa. Mm-hmm. If the children fail, it's a little bit reflective on the parents.
Yeah.
And I think it's true in businesses, for CEOs and employees. I think it's true for any type of unit in which you have leaders and people. We are in this together, as you mentioned before. And the recognition that there is a deep unity and deep share of responsibility, that in of itself should atone for the people, as the verse goes on to say.
So we're recognizing that the leader can err, can make an error, and there's certain responsibilities incumbent upon him when he does. But it's also communicating the responsibility of the people that maybe it's their fault for picking a leader that erred, right?
That's correct.
And go ahead, sorry.
No, that's right. And, you know, it's interesting because the word for leader in Hebrew is an interesting word. There's a word, I mean, there are multiple words for leader, but one of the words is manhig, which really comes from the Hebrew of nahag. Nahag means a path maker, someone who paves a path. And in many ways, that's the goal of the leader, that he or she should pave a path for the people to walk in. And when they journey together on that path, they have this shared responsibility, the leader for paving the path and the people for choosing to walk on it.
I know what I thought was a Yiddish word is minhag. Is that related? Custom? Path? Is it the same thing or not so much? You can tell me.
No, you're right. It is. Minhag does come from the same root word in
Hebrew. People like to say that's not my minhag. That's not my path.
Right.
Custom.
Not my path. Exactly. But that's the idea. Custom is a path.
Okay.
Some people say it's not my path.
It's the same.
But it's the same idea.
Same derivation.
That's right.
Okay. Good. Well, I think you answered every question I had. The people have a responsibility. I'm gonna make a political point about that.
Let me add one more point.
Sure.
If we're on this already.
Sure.
I think there's another message here, and that is that every leader is a part of the people, mm-hmm. is a follower, so to speak, mm-hmm. and every follower is a leader.
Yeah.
And what this really means is that there's a leader inside each and every one of us. Even if you think yourself as sheep, mm-hmm. as followers, mm-hmm. as just part of the masses of the people, mm-hmm. then find that leader. And follow that call, the Vayikra that we were speaking about. Pave that path, and you'll lead yourself and the world to greatness.
Thank you, Rabbi Pinchas Salush. Thank you very much. I'll be back with a concluding thought. I'll excuse the rabbi because it's going to be a political one, and we don't want to.
<That's>
I'm going to drag us back into it. Thank
no
you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. You can't have Rabbi Alush. He doesn't get the Al Hurt trumpet. He gets Dolly Parton sing. That's okay. It's good. It's good. It's good. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Portions of this show brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. InvestYRefi.com. That's invest the letter Y, then REFY.com, or give them a call at 888-YRefi. 24. Through their tremendous generosity, they have underwritten our March 26th event, which is taking place coming up this Tuesday, our Fighting for Freedom event at Arizona Christian University. Mike Gallagher, Brandon Tatum, myself, some other special guests. There are tickets available. It's the lowest price ticket we've ever done an event with and for because of the YRefi generosity. So go to 960thepatriot.com to get those tickets. We have general admission and VIP as well. We'll be talking about the election and the issues in the upcoming election, which does relate to the point I wanted to make with the rabbi in the last part of Leviticus we were talking about, which is the responsibility of the leader to the people and the people to the leader, and that very interesting passage in Leviticus 4 that the scholars debate. Is if the leader errs, is it all incumbent upon him, or is it the sin, the mistake of the people for choosing that leader? And Aristotle makes an interesting point in his book on the politics. that the leader of a polity, of a populace, of a polis, the leader, says, shapes the character of the people. The leader shapes the character of the people. You look around at the leadership we have right now. People ask, how can this be? How can that be? Whether it's, you know, crime, whether it's the drug situation, whether it's the diseases of desperation and despair, whether it's the immigration, you name it. What has happened to us? What has happened to us as a people? We go through periods like this. There was a period like this in the 90s as well. There was a period like this in the 70s as well. It's a bad idea in politics to blame the people. It's a bad idea to blame the American people. Jimmy Carter learned that the hard way. But it is incumbent that if we are going to be a good people, we have the job of putting in place good leaders, because we are a reflection of them, like it or not. Right now, I don't. But our work is to get to a place where we do. And that has to do with the leadership we select. We all have that duty. There is a leadership in all of us with that duty. Mr. Bill, thank you. Young David, thank you. Terry, everyone else, God bless you all. Until Monday, I'm Seth, and class is dismissed.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.